So the Dhamma for today is the Bodhjhanga. Bodhjhanga, the seven factors of enlightenment, or qualities, aspects of an enlightened mind. It's obviously a core part of the Buddha's teaching. It's something that we can aspire towards, but also use to check for those who are concerned about progress or wondering about their gain and their success in the practice. Consideration of the Bodhjhangas is a way to determine one's proximity to the attainment of enlightenment. So you can check the existence and the maturity of these seven factors, seven qualities or aspects. These seven qualities make up the mind that is at the level of becoming enlightened. So with the maturation of these seven qualities, one is capable of attaining enlightenment, awakening to the truth, understanding the nature of reality, letting go of suffering. And so this is the core goal of the Buddha's teaching. So the first factor, of course, is sati, mindfulness. Mindfulness, no cultivation of wholesome qualities in the Buddha's teaching would be complete without a discussion of mindfulness. Mindfulness is at the core, at the pinnacle of development in the teaching of the Buddha. Of course, there's not a lot that needs to be said about mindfulness. This is something that should be familiar to us as practitioners of the Buddha's teaching. Mindfulness being so very core, very essential, that it's familiar. But how it relates to enlightenment, why is it a factor of enlightenment, or how to understand that mindfulness actually does some good for us and lead us closer to the attainment of enlightenment. Lies in understanding what we mean by the word enlightenment. So another word for it is awakening, but it basically means coming to understand the truth of reality as it relates to happiness and suffering. So understanding the causes of suffering, to let go of them and to abandon them. Understanding suffering so that we don't cultivate it, so that we don't instigate further suffering. And on the other hand, understanding freedom from suffering and the path that leads to freedom from suffering. So this is what we're aiming for. But mindfulness involves paying attention to the very things that cause suffering, paying attention to the very things that constitute suffering. Mindfulness means grasping things as they truly are. So mindfulness is the process by which we change the way we look at reality, or it increases our capacity to even look at reality in the first place. Mindfulness has the characteristic of not wavering when we experience reality, when we experience phenomena. So when we see and hear, the mind that doesn't get triggered and lost in extrapolation, in judgment, in making more of things than they truly are. Mindfulness grasps the very experience as it is. When we cultivate on a momentary basis the practice of noting, saying to ourselves, seeing, or when we have pain, or even just the movements of the body, walking, is the process of grasping the objects, grasping the experiences at their essence. so that seeing is just seeing. Pain is just pain. Walking is just walking. When we get on this level of being able to experience things just as they are, that's where our understanding of how they work, how reality works, begins to appear, begins to develop. We're able to part the clouds of recursive thought, of judgment, of extrapolation, of conceptualization. Normally we think of experiences as people and places and things and ideas and judgments, and so on. We have so much more that we add on to experiences. Mindfulness is at the very essence of the cultivation of enlightenment, and it's the most essential factor in the cultivation of enlightenment, because it's the very approach to the experiences that we're trying to understand, to the phenomena, to the Dhamma, to the reality that we're trying to understand. It's as though we finally pay attention to the things that are causing us suffering and that are preventing us from finding freedom from suffering, the happiness and peace. So without paying this sort of attention, without being able to confront the experiences just as they are, we'll never be in a position where we can even begin to free ourselves from suffering and find the truth that leads us to happiness and peace. So a practice of mindfulness is what leads us, what opens the door and begins us on this path that leads to freedom from suffering. It's the first and the most essential of the seven qualities or factors of enlightenment. The second is Dhamma Vicaya. Dhamma Vicaya literally translates as something like investigation or exploration of truth, of Dhamma, of reality. The commentary explains that it really just refers to wisdom, or it is a way of describing wisdom. And this gives us a idea of what is meant by wisdom in the Buddha's teaching. Wisdom isn't something intellectual, philosophical, abstract, conceptual. Wisdom really is the mind that is approaching and investigating and exploring the true nature of reality. It's the inevitable consequence of cultivating mindfulness. So as we pay attention, even just watching the body move, watching the mind think, watching the emotions and confronting them and acknowledging them and reminding ourselves, this is seeing, this is feeling, this is walking, and so on. This is the inevitable consequence, is that we begin to understand reality. We have this quality of mind, and this is something you can check that comes as a result of mindfulness. You can notice. But as a result of paying attention, your mind becomes, in a way, kind of curious or more familiar with experiences, more alert to their nature, to their interactions, to the way causes lead to effects. You know, the cause of suffering leads to suffering, the cause of happiness leads to happiness, and so on. Seeing the mechanics of how the mind creates good habits and bad habits, and how these habits lead to happiness or lead to suffering. The mechanics, the way the mind works, this is what you come to see. You come to see the nature of the experiences, the nature of the things that we come in contact with in our experiences, the nature of the objects that we crave, the nature of the objects that repulse us, the nature of that craving, the nature of that repulsion. Most importantly, you come to see that none of it is worth the craving, the clinging, the aversion, the repulsion, the reactions. None of it is worth the stress and the worry and the fear and the hopes and the dreams and the ambitions. None of it is worth any of that. Specifically, seeing that all of the things that we crave for or cling to are impermanent, are unstable, unpredictable, not dependable. Seeing that they are unsatisfying, that no matter how much we get of the things that we think are going to satisfy us, they can never really make us happy. And no matter how much we try to chase away or run away from the things that cause us suffering, we can never find satisfaction. We never truly be at peace as long as we're running away from things or seeking or chasing after other things. And that all of the things that we chase after or run away from are not under our control. They aren't ours, they don't belong to us. We don't have any real say over how they come or go or behave. So seeing these three things changes our perspective on reality. This is the essence of wisdom. This is the investigation that goes on through the cultivation of mindfulness. It's better thought of as a quality of mind than an actual activity. So investigation is not something you should actively take on trying to force some kind of understanding to arise. It's the natural consequence of paying attention, and you should allow it to arise naturally. You should notice that as a result of being mindful, we're able to have a better perspective on the way things work, and we have our mind just naturally inclines to seek out and to understand things the way they truly are. The third quality, virya, means effort. So the enlightened mind, or the mind that is on the right path to become enlightened, is one that is full of energy, that is alert, aware, sharp. The ordinary mind, the mind that is clouded by defilements, is dull, is drowsy, is tired, is lazy, is lacking in this sharpness, this energetic nature, this exuberance that you find in someone who is on the path to become enlightened. So you'll notice that through the practice of mindfulness, that you over time develop this natural quality of effortless energy. A person on intensive practice will find that they need to sleep less, sometimes not sleeping at all, practicing all day and all night, finding that they are never tired, their mind is never dull, their mind is sharp. There should be an energetic quality to the mind, something that you notice as a result of being mindful, which is, of course, a very important part of the actual cultivation of mindfulness. It's a loop where the more energetic you become, the better your mindfulness is, the better you're able to confront and face and see things as they truly are. The fourth quality is piti. Piti means rapture, or zeal, enthusiasm, contentment. It's the quality of mind that is inclined naturally towards something. So in the case of the practice of mindfulness, how it relates to mindfulness and the cultivation of enlightenment, it means the sort of exuberance or zest for the practice itself, which is absent when we first begin to practice. It can be very challenging and it can be a real battle trying to get the mind to even incline towards being mindful, incline towards paying attention and staying firm in the presence of desirable or undesirable experiences. But over time, what comes out of the prolonged practice of mindfulness is that the mind becomes content and even interested and comfortable in the practice of mindfulness. It gets in its groove, you know, so that it becomes second nature to cultivate mindfulness. Meditators will begin to find that they're naturally being mindful when they walk somewhere, when they stand, when they sit, when they eat, when they work or clean or any of the things that they do during the day. They'll find that their formal practice, it goes smoothly. What we're aiming for and what we're waiting to experience through our practice of mindfulness is this state where mindfulness comes effortlessly. So we have effortless energy, we're enthusiastic, and we're inclined towards the practice. Rapture is an essential part and an indication that one has come to another level of practice, where the practice becomes comfortable, where the act of being mindful becomes preferred by the mind, and the mind dives into it wholeheartedly, without reservations, doubts, or hesitations. You know, this kind of enthusiasm is what is called piti, an essential quality of the enlightened mind, where the mind is completely content with just experiencing things as they are, without needing to seek out or run away from any experiences whatsoever. The fifth quality is basati. Basati means tranquility. So obviously tranquility is an essential part of any description of what it means to be enlightened, something that we should look for in our practice and use as an indication for progress, most obviously. Now, for a new meditator, it's often tempting to try to control the mind and push the mind to be more tranquil, as we are disturbed by distractions and excessive thinking, disturbed by external phenomena, disturbed by bodily phenomena, and we find ourselves craving or wishing or seeking out this sort of tranquility. But that's problematic. I mean, that's not a valid means to become actually tranquil. If we're seeking out or craving for this tranquility, that's just a further cause for increased craving and increased stress, and won't have the ultimate goal of ultimate result of bringing one to a tranquil state. Tranquility is something that comes naturally out of the cultivation of mindfulness, as one's attitude towards experiences begins to change, as one loses the desire for pleasant phenomena, the aversion towards unpleasant phenomena, as one begins to experience things very simply, that seeing is just seeing, it's not many other things, there's no extra realities involved with seeing. Seeing is really just seeing. We, as the Buddha said, let go of the details, let go of the particulars of the experience, and experience it simply for what it is. Seeing is just seeing. Pain is just pain. Thinking is just thinking, and so on and so on. As we begin to experience reality in this way, our mind calms down. There's a natural tranquility. It's something that you should look for and use as a guide to confirm the progress and the maturation of your practice, as your mind begins to calm down naturally as a result of the cultivation and the development of mindfulness. The sixth quality is samadhi. Samadhi, meaning concentration or focus, is an essential term in the Buddha's teaching, one of the very core concepts. It's a concept. It's a word that is often used to describe meditation in general. Meditation in general is understood to be the cultivation of samadhi, concentration. So the mind becomes more focused and more concentrated. Obviously, this is a core aspect of what it means to cultivate meditation. In the beginning, our mind is distracted by any number of things, all of the external and internal experiences, all of the triggers and all of the emotions that arise. Our mind is not really focused, jumping from one object to another without any rhyme or reason, and without able to experience and understand the experiences as they truly are. So mindfulness uses concentration as a means to perceive and understand things. So the cultivation of understanding, the cultivation of wisdom, depends on this cultivation of, or this development and this existence, the presence of a focused mind, a concentrated mind. It's something that comes obviously as a result of repeated practice, and with all these other factors coming together, our mind will as well become more focused, able to experience things quite clearly. We will clearly see the arising of experiences, the ceasing of experiences, and thereby the impermanence, the unsatisfying, and the uncontrollable nature of our experiences. So this kind of focus is something that, again, you should see as a result of your practice, something that you should take as a sign of maturation and the presence of the qualities that will allow us to free ourselves from suffering. The seventh quality is upekkha. Upekha, if sati is the very beginning, the very doorway, or the very start of the practice, then upekha is the very end. Upekha is the final goal. Through the cultivation of mindfulness, at the very beginning, we find ourselves having to be mindful of our partialities, of our judgments, noticing how judgmental we are, liking certain experiences, disliking other experiences, often without any rhyme or reason. Really never with any good reason or any good solid foundation. And so as we begin to change our attitude or our perspective towards experiences, we and come to see that none of them are worth clinging to or reacting to, this is the ultimate inevitable consequence, that as a result of this maturation of the development of mindfulness, our mind eventually becomes completely equanimous. And this is the goal in a way that we're aiming for. You can be sure that you're on the right path and in the presence of the qualities that are necessary to become enlightened, that you're close to the experience of enlightenment when your mind is at this natural state of equanimity. Again, not forced or controlled. And it's important that you don't try to make your mind equanimous or push your mind towards not reacting. It's important that you allow the reactions to arise, that you come to see the reactions for what they are and come to naturally let them go, naturally change your attitude through wisdom, through understanding. Because at that time, when that comes about, you won't have to run away from bad experiences or chase after pleasant experiences. You'll find yourself able to experience all experiences without any judgment, without any partiality, feeling completely completely fresh and clear and energetic, without being dragged down by bad experiences or dragged away by pleasant experiences, always present, always conscious and aware of experiences as they arise. This equanimity is the highest of the mundane states. When one gets to this level of equanimity, one is at the doorway to become truly free from suffering, at the doorway to experience what we call Nibbana, which is the freedom, true freedom from suffering. So these seven are, again, an essential part of the Buddha's teaching and a description of what it means to have a mind that is matured, a mind that is either prepared to become to experience enlightenment or capable of entering into the experience of Nibbana, or describes the mind of one who has already experienced Nibbana, the mind of one who is or could be considered enlightened, someone who could be considered to have attained Bodhi, and therefore these are the Bodhjangas, the qualities of that mind. So something that we can and should take as goal, again, something that we can and should use to determine the quality of our mind in comparison. So understanding what we're lacking and having an awareness and a sense of the areas that we need to work on. One way we can look at these obviously is as a progression, that sati is the beginning, upekha is the end. So you can just take them very simply as one leads to the other. But the Buddha gave us another way of looking at these, a more advanced or complicated way of understanding them. He said sati you can think of as the center, obviously something that is essential to the practice, but the other six you can separate into two groups. So the first three, investigation, effort, and rapture, are on the side of energy or effort. They're on the energetic side. Whereas pasati, tranquility, concentration, and equanimity are on the concentration side. And so they can be approached in two different ways. When one finds one's mind is restless, distracted, over-energetic, then one can apply the second group, the group of pasati, or one can emphasize those. One can understand the need for those, the need for and the lack of those in one's mind. Whereas on the other hand, if one is drowsy and sluggish and the mind is unwieldy, one knows that one is lacking in the first three, the cultivation of investigation and effort and rapture. So, to some extent, we can understand that we need to apply ourselves to cultivate these things directly. And there are different external ways of doing this. So, for example, if you find yourself sluggish and need to develop the first three, you can maybe do more walking meditation. If you're sitting down and you're falling asleep or so on, you can get up and do standing meditation. Whereas on the other hand, if you find yourself restless, overly distracted, then you can sit down, or if it happens during sitting meditation, you can even lie down to change your attitude. Obviously, you can't, again, try to control the mind and force the mind into these things. So the best way to balance them and to adjust the imbalance is through the practice of mindfulness. The Buddha said mindfulness is always valuable. It's the only one of the seven, whereas the others are things that you should emphasize, as I said, depending on your quality of mind. The Buddha said mindfulness is always useful. Satincha kuang bhikkhave sabbatikang vadami. It's always atika. At means it has atta, it has value at all times. And so by using mindfulness, when you recognize that you're overly energetic or you're sluggish and overly focused, then you know where to apply mindfulness. You can apply mindfulness towards the sluggishness, the drowsiness, noting drowsy or tired. Or if you're restless, you know, you recognize that and you can note to yourself restless. And mindfulness has the capacity to cultivate all six of the other factors, as I already explained. So as you're being mindful, this is the cultivation of the ones that are lacking. Mindfulness is the best way to balance the faculties in the mind and to balance the qualities of enlightenment in this way. So a really valuable teaching of the Buddha's, and it's something that we recognize as an essential part of the practice, and should be reminded that actually are mentioned specifically in the four Satipatthana, in the Satipatthana Sutta. We find in Dhammanupassana that it doesn't include all of the many dhammas, all of the many teachings of the Buddha, but one set that it does include is the Bodhjhangas, with very good reason, because with mindfulness at the front, it leads to all of the other three as the essential qualities that allow us to realize the Eightfold Noble Path and the Four Noble Truths, and the culmination of the Buddha's teaching, which is the experience of enlightenment, awakening, and freedom from suffering. So that's the Dhamma for today.